Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Kia ora and welcome to the Aotearoa Rugby Pod. The Crusaders have won. Every week I introduce them. What's happened to the Crusaders? What's happened to the Crusaders? Well, the Crusaders are back and there's a big smile on Bryn Hall's face. We'll get to that in just a moment. But we've got a few things for you. There's some upsets. Obviously, the Crusaders beating the Chiefs. In Sydney, the Tars went down. In Brisbane, the Reds went down. Upsets are plenty in Super Rugby over the weekend. In the Hurricanes land, they just continue, but Cam Ruigard down. What does that mean for the halfback stocks? And we can find out, I suppose, later in the week about Ruigard's future, but that's very concerning for the All Blacks considering the form that he is in. Rain in La Toka. Goodness me, was it a swimming pool or a rugby field? Your emails, your YouTube comments. Of course, we've got this courtesy of Player Sports to give away to one of the questions that comes in from all of you and the tipping comp as well. With no further ado, Bryn Hall, very happy man. Pick the Crusaders. Got the Crusaders win. You must have been stoked at the end of that.
Yeah, it was, mate. It was a great night knowing that I could come on the Monday or the Tuesday and just be able to be really excited with the opening that you've just done, Ross. So, thoroughly enjoyed the result, and we'll go into a little bit more. But yeah, I guess to get a few more points on you boys on the old Aotearoa Rugby Pod table as well with 5 wins this week. It was a huge week for me, and very, very happy sitting over here in Japan at the moment.
Oh yeah, he's. Score was way back, but he's still behind us, Ross. So just keep chipping away.
Obviously, a lot changed. They looked like the Crusaders of old. I don't know if to say the Crusaders we all know and love, because I'm not sure that we all love them, but certainly they looked like the Crusaders of old.
Yeah, it did. And I think, you know, there are a lot of, I guess, positives that they were able to accumulate through the duration of that match. You know, I think your set piece, Jim will probably touch on that a lot more, but, you know, operating 13 out of 15, very early doors percentage wise, a lot higher. It's probably for the first time of this season, you know, they won the penalty count. They had two in the first half, which was pretty important, accumulating that at 22 points in the first half. And I think also defenders beat in 13, the Chiefs had 15, obviously, but then 10 line breaks to the 7 Chiefs, which we just haven't been accustomed to seeing with their attack throughout the year. It's been clunky, but, you know, to have those kind of numbers in that first half to, I guess, build those points and have some confidence in their first half was really, really good. But I think also defensively, yes, they operated at, you know, 86%, but I think the amount of high line speed pressure that they were able to put on the Chiefs consistently, getting them to turn in, was a lot. You know, you look at McNichol's try, you know, it could have gone for 14 or 7 points, but, you know, he's in that space, and a lot of times their wingers in that game and even their midfielders were going hard out the back to try and nullify that Chiefs attack. So, yeah, a lot of positives, but I guess the good thing for them now is to be able to go through the bye. They're going to get the cavalry back, and hopefully now with the 4 Australian teams coming next, they can accumulate some points moving forward and hopefully, you know, sneak into their top 8.
Jibba, do you see that happening?
Based on the weekend, yes. You know, like, I don't think the Chiefs played too poorly. Like, I think the Crusaders just got their mojo back. They got their kicking strategy on point. I think, as Bryn mentioned, set piece, 46% against the Blues, 87%. I know they're 100% sort of line-out team, but 87% is a lot better than where they were the week prior. And then I just think there's their clinical self. So for so long, we've talked about these 22-metre visits, and we've sort of used the Crusaders as a benchmark. Mm. So 5 tries out of 8 visits into the 22 against a really strong Chiefs side. Like, let's not underestimate. Yes, they didn't have Damien there, but pretty much everyone else was there ready to rock and roll. And I think it's the sort of game that will give the Crusaders confidence, and then they're not going to have the home run like they used to. They're going to probably more likely going to have to do it away from home, but I'm pretty sure every team that finishes higher up doesn't want to get there.
We talked about that last week, Bryn, the scary prospect of the Crusaders coming in seventh or eighth and what that could mean for the top couple of teams. They put them on notice pretty badly on the weekend.
You know, they're still going to be able to do, they're still going to be able to get the wins, you know. I know it's only one result, but, you know, the Australian teams, with how competitive they have been, you know, they've got a couple of games overseas as well, which we probably haven't travelled well on this year going overseas. So I think, you know, they'll be happy with the statement that they had against the Chiefs, knowing that, you know, they had to be desperate against the Chiefs, but they've got to accumulate those things. And the biggest thing that I enjoyed watching them was actually their attack. And Jib talked about, you know, their kicking game. They got a lot of gain out of their kicking game, but I think, and especially in the second half, they bent them a lot. You look at George Bell's try, the animation of actually everybody in sync, you know, the back ball out to Hoihepa, and then you're running into space with George Bell, and I think it was Jamie Hanna or Quinton Strain running that, but then the two guys out the back with McNichol and Levar Moore all engaged, which we just haven't seen with the Crusaders. So, you know, I think their face-to-face shape was a lot better on the weekend, racing into space as well, but I think for them, it's been able to build confidence and been able to, I guess, replicate that moving forward and continue to keep getting better like all the new other New Zealand teams are when it comes to the attacking game of the side.
Seeing a hooker in full flight like that, Jipper, it must have made you pretty happy.
God, he looked glorious through that gap, didn't he? It's a nice little down line and some raw pace. Everyone knows George has a massive future. He got called over for that South African game for the World Cup as cover. Jace Ryan's a big fan, so you know he is going to wear black at some point. Whether it's this season or not, maybe not, but I think the experiences he's getting now, he's probably used to winning pretty much every time he hits on the field. These experiences will hold him in really good stead and develop him mentally. And as we know, once you go up higher in the grades, mentally is the mental side of the game is probably the harder side of the game versus the skill set. So, he was outstanding and a big... big factor in their ability to stop the flow, I suppose, from the Chiefs set piece. Like, we sort of focus on theirs and how accurate they were, but, you know, they held the Chiefs to 80% at line-out time. They put good pressure on at scrum time, and George is a big part of that. So, yeah, it was a great night out, and nothing better than seeing a hooker in open space guessing fullbacks and wingers. Happy days in my book.
Not underestimating Noah Hogan's performance as well, Jip. You know, there's a lot of halfbacks that have been played really well throughout this competition, but with Mitchell Drummond going out late in the piece to then come on and performance, so I thought he was very instrumental in how the Crusaders' attack was able to open up very early on, taking the short side. You know, obviously sets up two tries very early doors to be able to have the momentum and confidence within the Crusaders' attack. So look, he also had 14 tackles. I don't know, Jip, maybe since I've left, halfbacks in general now are making 14 to 15 tackles in the game now. So
it's interesting you say that, because he spent he did his development year with the Highlanders because he was studying down there, and one of the biggest things that came out of his experience down there is they said he spent a hell of a lot of time with Aaron Smith around the pass, but he spent a hell of a lot of time with Falau Fakatava around his defence. The kid loves to tackle. Like, he enjoys that collision area. So, if you look at two players, if he can mold himself on the strengths of both Aaron Smith and Falau Fakatawa, speaking of big futures, he certainly would have one.
The big future could be sooner than you think, because when we see Cam Rigard going down for the Hurricanes, and he looked in quite a bit of pain, understand through this week, you'll see a specialist and we'll find out more about it. But his knee injury could shake things up, Bryn. How do you see the three halfbacks in the All Blacks this year looking, considering Aaron Smith isn't there, considering Cam Rugard, you know, might not be there either?
Excuse me. Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. I think knowing that Nuggie's gone now, you would have thought Cam Rugard would have been there within the three halfback stocks. But I think Finlay Christie comes into contention now. I think also around that number nine role and being the starter, considering with the performance that he's putting together and the experience that he's had in that team, probably being the most experienced out of the new cab off the ranks. Then you've got, obviously, TJ Pettinato, who I think now is going to be able to play a lot more and, I guess, be able to influence games and have that kind of leadership role, which I know Razor in turn likes in his nines and tens to be able to have that experience. But then I think also you've got the young people coming through. You've got Cortez Ratzina, who's going to continue to keep evolving with the Chiefs. got Falao Fakatava, who's, you know, I think one of the better performers in the Highlanders the last couple of weeks, even though they've been struggling. And then you've also got Noah Hotham as well, who's had a great performance on the weekend. I think in turn with Razor and knowing what he wants out of his halfbacks in big games and derby games, when you're playing against the Nines and being able to have good games in those situations, they're going to have a lot of benefit, especially in the back end of the year. So yeah, there's a lot of guys that are putting their hands up, but that's probably how I see it at the moment with the halfbacks at the moment.
So you're saying it would be Finlay Christie starting, TJ Pettinata in the mix, and Falao Fakatava as the third option within that squad as it stands?
Sorry, my headphone just went. I'd go off. It's either out of a Falao Fakatava, Cortez Ratira, or a Noah Hotham. Those three would be going for the third spot. I think TJ, what I think is going to happen with him throughout the season, he's that competitive and he'll end up playing some really good footy, and that experience side you can't buy. So yeah, that's how I'd have it. You'd have the first two, Finlay, TJ, and then the other three younger guys fighting it out for that third position.
It's a hard one. I think that was Falao Fakatava's best performance for a long time on the weekend, even though I know the Canes were dominant. I definitely would have thought Cam was probably sitting pretty comfortable in his performances to be the starting nine, but off the back of his injuries, and let's be honest, the guy's tough as nails. If he's in pain, something's not quite right. So what I would say is probably, I agree with Brent in the sense that TJ will have a big in. He'll have a big role in my understanding. And I suppose just watching his performance against the Rebels, like, man, he's still got it. Like, it's not a gift sort of selection to just have experience. Like, he's a competitor. He's definitely still got it. But I think Finlay's probably knocking the most seat in terms of big minutes starting, similar sort of player to maybe like a Bryn or Aaron Smith or someone like that Razor has liked previously. So I think he's fitting that mold. And then it's that third one is the hard one, because if you go for a TJ, do you go for a like-for-like and what probably Falao Fakatava's very like, TJ? Or and Cortez Ratama, or you know, you've got Xavier Rowe who's challenging Cortez Ratama pretty strongly as well. So I think there's a lot of discussion and a lot of minutes to be played before that third. If Falao keeps going the way he is, then I think it's his. But if there's a peak in form for Ratama or Rowe or whoever it may be, then and I suppose actually, you know, I shouldn't ignore Noah Hotham. You know, like he if he gets some big minutes and starts being the main starter, you know, he could really push himself into that side, and he could be the perfect mix for that third spot, because he's got a bit of TJ and he's got a bit of Finlay, if that makes sense.
Yeah, Bryn, when you look at what Razor wanted out of you and Drummy and the other halfbacks when you're at the Crusaders, what were the key things? You know, we've obviously had Aaron Smith, a passing halfback more than anything else there for quite a long time. What's Razor's preference in around number nine?
I think with how Cam Roygaard was playing, that's, I think, the evolution of what the New Zealand halfback's going to be looking like going into the Rugby World Cup. But to answer your question, Ross, I think for us, because our game wasn't really based around off nine, it was based around how can we get the ball out to Richie and for him to be able to, I guess, influence the game and being able to get out to those kind of parts of the field. Our job was to be able to get the ball out as fast as we could, get the breakdown, owning that with our forwards and be able to get that quick ball and then let things kind of go out through there, through Richie and the guys that are on the outside. So, you know, I'm not too sure whether Ray wants to have that style. I guess, you know, international rugby is a little bit different, and I think with how it is going, you're going to have a bit of a few strengths in your bow in terms of getting the ball out really quick, which is going to be really crucial. But I think having that influence of like a Roy Gunn and what he was showing at Super Rugby level and what he does very similar to DuPont and being able to have carries and really, I guess, test defense around their hard defense, I think you're going to have a balance there. So it'll be very interesting to see which way Razor goes. But to answer your question, us nines at that time was to get the ball out to Richie as fast as we could and play on top of teams and then let our playmakers outside of us influence the game and win games.
Chip, I'm imagining that's the way that McKenzie likes to play, presuming that McKenzie would be the starting 10. You know, if there's talk about whether Moonga will be able to come back and play if they change the rules. But if it was McKenzie, is that the way you would see them wanting to play with McKenzie?
I can't see Razor changing those sorts of big rocks and his philosophy of how to win games of rugby, if that makes sense. So you have to think, you know, then a Finlay, a Noah, you know, these players – Probably going to be more in that pegging order. And I don't know if it's Jason Holland who's doing the midfield and Scott Hampson is the halves, but they'll have a big say as well, so it won't just be Razor. Is it Scott Hampson, Brunner?
Yep, he's a his.
There'll be sort of, so 9s, 10s. So his philosophy will be big in that. And if you can see one consistent link of this coaching group, it's him and Razor. So I think that will remain true. So a halfback that's going to get rid of the ball fast and doesn't overplay their own hand running the ball and having the ability to just free up and make time for guys like Damien McKenzie and Curran.
That sounds out Finlay Christie to me as the starting option then, right?
I think so. Currently, on current form.
If you're looking around a like for like with Aaron, Finlay does it really, really well. You look on the weekend, his ability to be able to be there when the ball's ready to go, and sometimes the Blues attack isn't even set because it's how fast he's getting to the ball. But knowing Razor and what Scott Hansen and what they want from the Nines in the past being with him, it's been able to get that ball out as fast as you can. And Finlay does that to a T. He's also got a great kicking game, which Liam McDonald has had a lot of time with him when it comes back to the contestable games. And defensively as well, his work in and around the breakdown, communication, his tackle and jackal work and being abrasive in that contact area. He has all those traits that all those kind of coaches enjoy. So, yeah, I think Finn's in a really good place. And I think, like we said, TJ has that experience. And then you've got to be, I think, that third role, having that ability to have that game-changing ability with Falau Fakatava, Hotham, of course, Zeratimi, Xavier Rowe, those guys that have the ability to attack as well. So, yeah, but Finlay Christie, I think, is sitting pretty at the moment.
Now, our first viewer question today, we've had a question from Janice Millay. Now, Janice sent us through an email, including the word etiology, which I'll get into in a moment. For that word alone, I think, Janice, you should get the player sport ball, because I had to get the dictionary out to figure out what it was. So, Janice, player sport ball coming your way. But when discussing the Crusaders' losing streak, I noticed you have yet to mention the Chiefs' losing streak of a few years back. How is the etiology of these two losing streaks different? And do you think the Crusaders will come out stronger next season, similar to how the Chiefs rebounded after their losing streak? Now, the losing streak they're talking about. Chiefs lost 8 games straight in 2020 in Super Rugby Aotearoa. Under Warren Gatland, of course, it went to Clayton McMillan the following year and things have been going uphill since then. They had injuries. They had all sorts of problems. And before I go to you guys, to add to it, what does etiology mean? Etiology is the investigation or attribution of the cause of something. So why'd it happen? Do you see the similarity there, Jip, between those two things? And do you think that what the Chiefs have been through now will change the way that they perform, the Crusaders in time to come?
Both situations came through probably a lot of the leaders being injured and or leaving. And then that spine, I suppose, your hooker, your main lock, your number 8, your 9, your 10, your 15. If you get a lot of changes in those positions, they're quite key positions in terms of decision-making and how the game sort of plays out. And if you look at the Chiefs, they certainly did through injury more so than people leaving that season, and obviously a lot of the issues for the Crusaders, say, is players that have left. But this opportunity is not to just be captain positive, but I think there's a next generation of player that will spend a lot of time in an all-black jersey, that this experience and this ability to fight their way out of this will not be a bad thing. And I'm talking of George Bells, Hotham's, even Rivers Rehana, the Dallas McLeod. There's a lot of players that have got a big future. Jamie Hannah, Dom Gardner, they're having a fight in this experience. It will be, although they'll think, what a stupid thing to say, because they're not enjoying it. Mm-hmm. They can't see it at the moment. I think it would be positive for their careers and the countries.
You look at the Chiefs in 2020 when they went on that 0-8 run. Yes, they weren't picking up results, but it's the time in the saddle in certain positions. The spine that Jip alluded to is really important to play a lot of minutes. And so I think the young kids that have been playing the Crusaders that haven't been getting the results, yes, it's been a tough lesson, but knowing that group and knowing that environment, the resilience and the solution focus and being able to say it's accountability of how we can be better, coaches and everybody involved with that environment, it's just going to set them up real nicely, not just more so, hopefully, you'd like to think, for Crusader fans for the rest of the year, and hopefully peak year coming towards the finals time, or, you know, for next year when they do get all those guys coming back that aren't injured, and those guys have grown within the last 12 months, having the time in the saddle, having those experience against the derby games, against big test match players, it's only going to set them up well. So hopefully, as a fan, Crusaders fan, it happens at the back end of the year, but this time is invaluable for all those guys that Gyps talked around with the young fellas coming through. It's going to be massive for their growth, and hopefully a kickstart of the new generation Crusaders coming through the system.
Bryn, the other similarity there is new coaches. Warren Gatland was the new coach to the Chiefs at that point, and Rob Penny is a new coach to the Crusaders at this point. How long do you think it takes to bed in those ideas and those systems and those kind of things? Is it just something that has to kind of happen to a degree?
Yeah, to a certain extent, but, you know, there are still guys that have been in that environment for a while. You know, you like Steve Tarmody Allison, who has a big role with that environment, has been there for a long time. You've got Dan Perrott, who's been there for his third year now. Obviously, James Marshall's been there for 2 years. So I know Scott Hansen and a Razor have left, but there have been coaches that have been in an environment. For Rob Penny, when he has come in, he's going to have a pretty good understanding of how the group's run. He'll have his own identity in and around the mix of that. But, you know, losing guys like Richie Mwanga, you know, Sam Whitelock, those two guys were massive pillars within the Crusaders environment. And then also the injuries that they've picked up, and the draw that they had, it was really a really tough start for Rob, you know what I mean? So, yes, it is a little bit different when you bring a head coach in, but knowing that group, they wouldn't have found that as an excuse. They would have expected to have things running again and, you know, keep continuing the dominance that they've had, but they've had to show a lot of resilience, the injuries, and I guess the way that they've wanted to have that well-oiled machine with their tackle defense for periods of time during the start of the season. So hopefully this kickstarts it now. And like I said, the draw that they did have was tough, and now they've got four Australian teams, and hopefully now they can get a bit of form and then, you know, make it a seventh or eighth spot for the quarterfinals moving forward.
Everybody, if you send questions, put them in the comments section on YouTube or on email, aotearoarugbypod@sky.co.nz. You can go in to get this player sport Gilbert ball, and we'll send one of those a week out. So thank you very much for sending that through, Janice. Straight on to another question. This one comes from Shane Allison via email. It's something that we've talked about a little bit in the last couple of weeks, the use of Levi Almua, and whether the Crusaders are doing it to their advantage. Did we finally see against the Chiefs on the weekend the right way to use Levi Almua from the Crusaders' point of view, Jipper?
I think we trended the right direction, but I think a player of Levi Almua's skill set relies on a lot of bodies in motion and around him. I just felt the rhythm. I do think their kit strategy was a lot better, which helped their attack. I felt like they nailed that, which freed them up to attack in their usual. But I also feel like every player just committed. Like, what the Crusaders have done so well for so long is, you know what they're going to do. You know how they're going to play. But they are so ruthless, they will just do it time and time again. They'll run the down line. They will run the ball out the back. They will just keep doing it. And the picture will look the same from a defensive point of view, but you don't know who's been hit. They chose the right people to hit more often than not on the weekend, and I felt that was the difference.
I think there's great ways that you can do it off the bat. Do you know what I mean? You can prescribe it. So, you know, if line out strikes or scrums, you can get the ability to have a one-on-one tackle with the animation that that Jeff is talking around. That's a great way to bring him in the game. But, you know, a lot of moving parts, and, you know, in rugby, there's 15 players that are on the field, and very similar to Ireland. Look, you know, they're manipulating and isolating certain people for long periods of time, and everybody's knowing their role. So, you know, if a Levi Almua is going to get a half a man tackle on a loose forward or on the edge, you know, that's a win, being able to then get over the advantage line. He can put guys away, and we'll be able to see those line breaks that we're able to see with him with Wana Pacifica. So, again, the George Fowle trial was something that I really enjoyed seeing. The animation side of it, the bit, you know, how square Jamie Hanna is at the line, being able to get the ball out the back, and then you're going up against the prop, and you're in those kind of fifth to sixth, seventh defender spaces, and you've got guys running onto that line. So, you know, this time it was George Bell, it might be Levi Almua coming on in another phase play shift within that Crusaders attack. So, yeah, and now we just want to see the continuation of that moving forward. So the clunkiness has been there for the majority of the season, but what I saw on the weekend and how they can manipulate teams a bit better, if they can use that with Levi Almua a little bit more moving forward, it's going to set the Crusaders up really well and been able to, I guess, ask more questions, especially with his physical ability one-on-one as well.
I like what Bryn says about Ireland, Jip, because when you think about the way that they use Bundiaki, that would be the perfect situation, wouldn't it, for the Crusaders with Almua?
Yeah. So the problem I have with that, though, I've been thinking about this a lot around how they can use Levi a little bit better. Bundy's at 12. Nari Lamapi was at 12. 13 just seems a little bit far out to sort of have that same ability to either bust over the game line or, you know, you're such a threat that like opportunities will present itself for players out the back like a Havilion. So I suppose that's the only reason I've been struggling. Is I know it sounds silly, it's only one position in, but it is a lot easier to promote those guys to be that sort of strike runner, direct carry, and or utilize players out the back with them running the same line and hopefully committing defenders. That's the only thing I would say. So I think you've got to get a little bit more creative. And I think the Crusaders have shown it previously, Brim. Like I tried to mention it, and I probably didn't articulate it that well a couple of weeks ago, but I just remember when we used to play against you guys, and Havili would be that first receiver. There'd be a nice down line from Jack Goodhue, and then they'd have Richie out the back. And I just see that down line of Jack Goodhue for Levi Moore. Man, he's either punching through that or getting a game line carry. And if you don't use him, it's going to hold defenders and hopefully open up space wider out or for a Ritters Rehan or whoever's a 10 to sort of pounce in that sort of separation of the defense, yeah. Focus on Levi. So that's the only thing I can think of bringing into the game.
Yeah, no, I think a perfect example of that, if you look at Anton Leonard Brown's try,
yeah,
you look at the very good first all carry, and then you've got Luke Jacobson coming around the corner. You've got Anton Leonard Brown coming in short with Josh Wani off the back.
Yeah.
I think that's a very similar picture that you're talking to. If you can get him to be able to be aligned with that guy second, third phase, look, he's going to get a half and half tackle go through like Anton Leonard Brown, or he's going to suck in at least two defenders possibly for them to go out the back and then open up spaces like you're talking about with Jack Goodhue and what he was able to do when he was here with David Havili in that combination.
It's been a tough time for Moana Pacifica without Levi Amor, who got them on the advantage line. Obviously, Tava Tava Nawa was another person who made things happen for them when things weren't happening. Those things just aren't happening now necessarily for Moana Pacifica, beaten 47-8 by the Blues at Eden Park. Now, for me, looking at this, I mean, you can talk about the football. We've talked about them and what's going right and wrong. But the fact...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
That Moana Pacifica are taking a home game to Eden Park, the home of the Blues, a very strong team who shouldn't be given any more chances than they should be allowed. Giving them another home game is not helping Moana Pacifica. This is a team that needs a home.
Well, I totally agree with you, but it's you have to feel for them a little bit. Like, they were hoping to make North Harbour Stadium their home. Things have gone awry with the pitch there. So it's not through lack of trying. Obviously, the Warriors came back to Mount Smart, but yeah, I think the organisation as a whole wants that more than anything. They're trying to do the best with what opportunity they got, whether they could maybe look at counties. That's a fairly strong stadium. It's based out in South Auckland, where a lot of the community and people they want to aspire are based. I agree with you. I don't have the answer, but I also sympathise with the position they've been put in with decisions they've made where it hasn't just lined up.
Yeah, you look at the Fijian Drua, for example. You know, we'd love to see them Moana Pacifica be in the exact same way. It's because they're based in Fiji. they're based in Fiji. They're able to play those games, which they're accustomed to their conditions and how much of a weapon it really is, you know. So I'm not too sure what the goal is in and around what that's going to look like for Modern Pacific. There's obviously a lot of logistics that have to be changed, and whether it can be done on a quick turn, I'm not too sure. But yeah, I think the sooner that can happen, especially for those boys, to be able to give them at least a fair playing field of confidence and knowing that they can have a week-to-week in a situation where, like, it's the Fijian draw, and it's a lot easier for them to be able to train, play games which they're accustomed to knowing, and being able to have that ability to play in that country, which is, you know, how hard it is to play in Fiji. So yeah, I'm not too sure, but yeah, it's really tough to watch, and knowing that Tano and them putting obviously a lot of work in, and we're just not seeing the results out of that team at the moment.
You speak of Lataka, that was outrageous. The conditions on the weekend, the rain as the Drua beat the Force 31-13 was crazy. Jip, like, when there was one try in particular where the splashdown just went absolutely everywhere. I think it was Ravu Tamanda.
Tamanda.
It was Tamanda. Just crazy. Playing in those conditions and the way that they managed to accumulate their points, that was really impressive.
Seriously impressive. And they chanced their arm. Like, they had a great balance of, you know, sort of clearing their line, but also then, you know, trying to utilise players like Musi and co, Ravu Tamanda out wide from deep, and they certainly... Even some of their kicks were attacking kicks. You know, like, there are a couple of times when two players were coming in, if he's the fullback for the Force, and then the Drua player chasing, and they're both sliding into the water. But yeah, I mean, from my point of view, as a type forward, I used to lick my lips when I saw that amount of rain, because I knew that we'd had a lot to do. We'd be busy boys. So it was certainly wet. I sort of mentioned off air, but Brenner and I played a similar game monsoon season in Joburg at Ellis Park. And tell you what, Elton Yenches was very similar to the Drua. He chanced his arm. He put on a clip the first 40 minutes. I think they scored four or five tries in the first 40, and a lot of it was from, like, crossfield kicks, chip and chases, like stuff that you just would expect in the dry at 2 p.m. in the sun. But, yeah, the Drua sort of replicated that. It brought back... horrible memories for myself anyway, but when Yeechies took us to school.
did you enjoy that game, Brent?
Mate, I didn't actually. Thank you for bringing that back up, Jim. I think I got dragged at halftime. I was playing that horrendous in that game. So, yeah, I think we actually... Dad, I remember that whole week. It was actually all dry. Like, I think we'd just flown over. Yeah. It was all dry the whole week, and then this monsoon just come over, and yeah, they were playing very similar to what the Fijian Drua were doing, offloads and kicking, attacking kicks, and I just sit back in half time thinking, geez, we played in the same team. He's playing the same conditions. Because they were put on an absolute clinic. But one guy that I was impressed with on the weekend, Jip, and Ross was Armstrong. And I think, you know, with the red card, the yellow card, and then I think also, you know, accumulating 12 points in that kind of duress of the yellow card and the red card, and also the weather as well. I think it was a great game from him. And I think, you know, it's great to see it's great to see games like that for the Fijian Drua to pick up points in a smart game like that, which it could have gone either way. You know, sometimes it's an equaliser having the rain, but, you know, I thought game management wise, they were really good. And I think, you know, you look at Musi's try in the 42nd minute. I think he's absolutely smoked the kick, but obviously with the wet rain, it stopped it. But, you know, some really smart and classy touches from Armstrong on the weekend.
Well, I've been looking for any reason to pat myself on the back, and now just stealing the opportunity. I did identify him as my rookie to watch, Armstrong Lavola, and he has delivered. And then another one at the back end of FPC, lads, I don't know if you sort of remember that far back, Josh Jacob. You know what, he's just come on leaps and bounds since we promoted him on the Aotearoa Rugby Pod. So, you know, I know my first fives, that's all I'm saying.
You should be getting a cut of any place that they are hired. The kicking from him, though, from Armstrong Ravula, I thought was amazing. Like, when you looked at the ground and the way it was waterlogged and the way his plant foot goes down and splashes, to be able to kick Bryn to that degree is quite impressive.
Oh, yeah, and being a goal kicker myself. Yeah, absolutely. look, at tough conditions, and he's not just doing that in the weak condition, which is obviously a great feat and really tough conditions to do that, but he's done that throughout the year. he's had some big kicks and some big games to be able to win some games or have momentum and been able to put it out to an awkward position for the other team. And he's 19, 20, if I'm correct?
Yeah.
You've got Munts there, who's obviously been injured. He was big for Fiji and Fiji and Dura last year. So the depth that they're having at their number 10 position for the Fiji and Dura and Fiji national team, it's huge. And hopefully he can continue. And hopefully, for me, I would love to see, I don't know if it's going to happen, but if the Fiji and Dura get a top four spot, look out for the competition. You do not want to be travelling there. You don't want to be travelling there. So hopefully they can pick up a few away wins and McBurn can get a few wins for that team.
I want to go back to your comment that you would enjoy going out and playing in games like that. Like, what kind of sicko are you? That is absolutely crazy. How do you hold on to the guys around you when you're packing down? How does any of that work in that kind of weather?
No, but it's also in that sort of weather, you know, like defensively, you got to make a lot of tackles. Line speed becomes a real weapon because the attacking team are worried about their skill set. As a tight forward, you know you're going to get a lot of carries because they're not going to want to be too expansive. So from my point of view, I was like, oh, yeah, I used to love it when it was wet because it meant there was a lot of touches rather than just cleaning 70 breakdowns for 80 minutes and, yeah. And letting guys like Oscar Satoudal and Stephen Petruschetta light things up.
And if you're a halfback, you're going, no, not interested in this.
No, honestly, I used to love wet games. I think the game management side was way more paramount. And I think, you know, when I was there, we had a pretty good forward pack in sense of being able to go to light out law and scrums. And so it was just really a war of attrition. And so as a halfback in our game planning, kicking and being able to, I guess, talk to the forwards around the breakdown and whatnot, it was just more of a game management. So I really enjoyed the wet games. Had some really good games and you really enjoyed it.
You just put them up for George Bridge to chase and let it be.
Pretty much it, mate. Pretty much it. And if you get in a bit of trouble, you go to a set piece drive and go to a penalty, go to a set piece drive, line out more, scrum penalty, and accumulate points that way. So
you're giving different nightmares. It's got PTSD from this kind of stuff.
And as I'll say, I was saying again, you knew what they were going to do, you just couldn't bloody stop it.
I find it kind of amazing, you know, when you think about a working situation where, you know, we've got all sorts of laws in place for safety and all of those things in all sorts of workplaces. Rugby is a workplace. That is literally the office. And I wonder at what point a decision gets made on whether or not that's safe. You know, the amount of injuries that can happen, the amount of things that can go wrong. Where is that line?
Having experience in some other roles I play, there's a pretty thorough process around it, not only when it's that wet, but also when it's hot, you know, in terms of temperatures and what sort of levers you have the ability to pull. So that process would have been followed in the lead up to that game, probably more so from an Australian and a Fijian position of what's safe, what's not, where are the current teams thinking. I can assure that those processes are in place and they would have been adopted. So it was obviously deemed by the people that are on the ground because a lot of it is reliant on the people that are in their current conditions. Those questions would have been asked basically is what I'm probably trying to say.
It seems like short of lightning, the threshold is pretty low. Like you will play.
Yeah. And I suppose I'm just trying to think as a player, like even when the day at Ellis Park, like it just would never have crossed my mind not to play.
Yeah.
You know, like it, you know, like we sort of joked that we might have drowned in a puddle. but you know, like it's not actually, you know, realistic. So it's a hard one. I think wet weather's probably harder to judge because of the puddles and so forth and how much unknown there is, whereas with heat it is what it is, so it's a lot easier to make decisions. I do find wet weather seems a little bit harder to know where that line is.
I think the only time it might be if there's thunder, you might have a rest period.
It's lightning, lightning, thunder and but obviously it wasn't. Now you rely a lot on the local knowledge. Who would be saying, nah, this is all good, or from my experience, it's not, should be cool, but
The week before in Lautoka, we had a completely different scenario where it was dry and it went to extra time. We had a golden point. The drawer got up over the Waratahs, and this leads to our next question from Liam Ireland on YouTube. You probably would have got the ball, except you didn't use the word etiology, and so it's all coming your way. A question about golden point. It's a very good question. Instead of being a straight win and loss on the points table, should the losing team in a golden point situation get 2 points instead of only one, the same as a draw, and the winner gets 3 points instead of four? This would allow the table to acknowledge a draw while also rewarding a team for winning in golden point. What's your thought, Bryn?
No, I think after the 10 minutes when you have the golden point, you're both given 2 points, if I'm not mistaken. So there is a reward in that sense of that after the 10 minutes is gone, you do get 2 points for both teams. So, and I think it's great to still have a winner. I think to be able to have that ability as a player, and I think people watching the game, there's that element of being able to try and to win the game in a golden point situation. So I really, really like it. I like seeing it in rugby league. They do it really well in rugby league. The difference that you could have, you just don't, if it's not a penalty, it's a golden try within the 10 minutes. It's something you could change, and so you take away the penalty element of being able to get 3 points. But no, I like it how it is at the moment with golden point. So yeah, I'm probably a little bit against that one, unfortunately.
I reckon there should be less extra points, like this win within, lose within 7, and you know, maybe a golden try, purely because a lot of the time we see teams take the 3 to get within the 7 rather than have the ability to potentially score a try and draw it to take it to golden point. Or, I just feel if it's just a straight 4 points to win, no points if you lose, same thing with golden point, winner takes all, is probably the way I sort of look at it. I just think the extra bonus points, yeah, just adds to the confusion. I know it's critical, but, you know, like Brid says, I just think there should just be an out-and-out winner and they get the points and the other team doesn't. Even if they lose by one, that's just a luck of the draw.
So you would strip away the try bonus points for getting 3 tries more than the opposition?
Yeah, I reckon. Maybe I'm just blinded by my love of the NRL, maybe. I don't know. But I just think it just should be 4 points when lose nothing. Just easier to understand, easier to interpret.
I'm with you there because I think that conditions change everything. You know, when you say it, one team plays under a roof and another team can play in monsoon conditions. You know, that just seems
totally
ridiculous
agree.
To me, right? Two different elements, one which allows for more tries and one which doesn't. And then you're always going to be rewarded more for playing in the dry conditions. It's just take it away. Mm. I agree. 4 points for the winner, 0 points for the loser, except I'm with him on this on golden point. I feel like we manufactured golden point, you know, and so there needs to be some acknowledgement of the fact that this team got to 80 minutes, which is when all other games finish, and they deserve something for it. Like, they deserve something, you know, even if it is just one.
Maybe they can coin coin. I don't know. But I would like to see it that you want to go to golden point rather than take a losing bonus point. You're putting in a position where you have to risk going for the 7 to draw it versus going for the 3 to get within that 7. Do you know what I mean? I just think that would be better in terms of, you know, excitement for the fan.
Cool. Thank you very much for a great question there, Liam. Let's move on to Super Rugby Opiki, where two teams have shone out throughout the competition, the Manawa and the Blues. And on the weekend, the Blues went to the Manawa in Hamilton and looked $1 million. And I didn't see this coming, Jip. Not in that way. To get a 40-26 win and really say, hey, we are a team to beat in this competition like that.
Yeah. Look, I did pick the Blues to win because they've created a hell of a lot of opportunity for themselves this season, but their turnover rate is so high. So if I give you a stat just to give you, going into that game, they had 90 successful offloads. The next best was like 52. So that they are literally just throwing offloads left, right, and centre. But they had 83 turnovers as well for those 90 offloads. And literally, they were winning collisions. And all they had to do was maybe take one more run. this game, I think they only had about 7 offloads. So I've been going at like 20, 25 offloads a game. They just went direct. They didn't look to interplay. They won that collision and they just built phase after phase after phase, and they became so ruthless with their entries in the 22. And we knew they had the ability to do so, but they were trying to score the tries from like phase 1 or 2. And speaking with Willie Walker before the game, I actually spoke to Sensen Johnson as well. Like, statistically, they've been very dominant, but their stats haven't. That pressure has not been converted into points. They've had the most entries into the 22 than any other side, but the least amount of tries. So it's like that. The opportunities are there, but they're sort of letting them go. So this performance was always in them. They just needed to change that mindset when they got into that red zone. And man, they did that and then some. And the other flip side of what made them win this game is they stopped the set piece. They dominated scrum and they stole line-out ball. So every time the Manor would go to the corner, we used to see that driving ball. They didn't get the opportunity to, because Ruse and Co were getting in the air and steering red ball. Don't get me wrong, there's some areas for the Blues to tidy up, and one would be discipline, 17 penalties. So they gave the Manawa a lot of opportunities to piggyback themselves up the field with their weapon in the maul. And then I suppose on the flip side of that, you do have to acknowledge some key players were rested. Opportunity was given to other players from the Manawa that brought the contest a little bit closer.
The Chiefs obviously had some players that were missing due to the fact that knowing that they had a little bit of a buffer on the standings, but you know they'll come back, and if anything, they'll come back hungrier. And I think if the Blues are going to give away, you know, 15, 16 penalties and give Luke O'Connor and co. more opportunities with line-out rules, yes, they defended it well, and I thought their set-piece scrum, they were able to be dominant there as well. It'll be a very, very tough day for them if they give them those opportunities with their big girls coming back and being able to have that have been rested. So that's the challenge for the Blues discipline-wise. But look, the physicality with their forward pack and being able to, look, just win collisions and their tight five brutally just going over the advantage line, it's even tough for the Chiefs to stop, even if they do bring that cavalry back. So the challenge for the Blues is, can they replicate that? Can they do that under a final situation? They'll take a lot of confidence out of it, but knowing the Chiefs and the people that are coming back, it's going to be a great tussle. I think it's just going to be able to see who's going to stay in it for long periods of time, who can make the crucial plays at the crucial times. And I think, you know, the confidence that the Blues will get off that, you could see how much it means to them. You look at Moy's try in the 77th minute, how much it meant to them. It's going to give that group a lot of confidence knowing that they're going to play them in the final.
With the Manawa on 19 points and the Blues on 18 points, you know, heading into this final round where they're both away, the Blues are playing the Poa and the Chiefs are going away to Matatu, who looked pretty good against the Poa on the weekend, there is top spot to be grabbed here in this last week, and that could be a real decider in this come the end, Jip.
Yeah, and you know the expectation is, I suppose the Manawa will bounce back. I think the one difference for the Manawa last season is they didn't have the scare during the season, and it almost, as much as they won't like to hear this, that loss may give them the better ability to win this competition rather than being, I suppose, going all the way to the final without losing and getting picked to the last hurdle. So I actually think in a weird way it's actually really good for the Manawa, because they've got the ability to say, hey, look, we have different accommodations and so forth, but also this is not going to be a walk in the park. For the Blues, I think they have to go out and make a statement performance, get the 5 points against the Poa and say, you know, give themselves the best opportunity to have a home final, but also say, doesn't matter where we play it. We're pretty confident in our game. They need to back up that discipline. Like 13 turnovers they had, they've been averaging like 26. It's half. It is a massive difference. And I know their coaching staff, you know, have been trying to labor this point, but that is it in black and white. If we run direct, we get good carry clean, we will win games.
And Matatu can really make the big play in this comp. They're the difference between the Blues coming first or the Chiefs coming first, Bryn.
Look, what they did on the weekend, look, their set piece tries off the scrum and lineup, them to be able to score off that was something really good. And I think having McGovern at 10 has really opened up Grace Brooker. I thought Grace Brooker was outstanding on the weekend with her line break, kicking ability, also her defensive work that her and Amy Duplessis have done throughout the duration of the competition. So it's whether they can have that execution of being able to get the set piece tries, because they know that they're going to have to stop that line out more. They haven't been able, they weren't able to do that last time, and discipline is going to play a big part of that. But look, their set piece attack I thought was outstanding on the weekend. So whether they can do that again, it's a challenge for them, but discipline will be huge for them. And you can't give Luke O'Connor a chance in that line out more, because even though the Blues stopped it pretty well on the weekend, if they get their chance in there, they'll see the same result that they did when they played the last time.
So what's your call, Bryn?
Oh, I could be going Mata 2.
There you go. Let's move on to Super Rugby tipping. Tipping.super.rugby. We're a few weeks in, so if you join now, you know, you're probably going to have a bit of trouble catching up. But on the table there, we've got Owen Carroll on 29 points. We've got the Hurley Gang on 29 points. They're well ahead of us. We're back. I'm on 24. Jib is on 24. Bryn is on 23 after his big pick for the Crusaders on the weekend.
Come on.
Guys, we've got a bye this weekend, so only four games, but Blues versus Force, first game up. Jipper, that seems like a fairly straightforward conclusion.
Yes. Blues won.
Yeah, Force weren't up to much on the weekend, although they were high conditions. Bryn?
Yeah, how are we going, the Blues? I'll continue the dominance.
Right. Rebels at home versus the Drua.
Yeah, I feel like this is a game that the Drua will be really, really trying to win this one. I think knowing that they have aspirations to, you know, finish fourth and hopefully have a home quarterfinal semi, they'll need to get this result. So on that front, I'm going to go with the Drua getting a win away from home. But could see the Rebels winning this game with them being at home. But I'll back the Drua.
Biggest strength of the Rebels is their physical dominance. They've led the comp. Believe it or not, in a lot of the collision stats, they won't get it all their own way against the Drua. So if the Drua can just replicate the way they've played and the way they've managed the game, where they've played their rugby and so forth, and not give away too many penalties, if they want to be serious finals contenders, the Drua have to win this game. If they don't do it, like, I just think they're just a home trip bully. I thought they've got to start beating something away from home.
I've rolled the dice and gone with the Rebels for that game, based off the away win against the Waratahs, who have been disappointing, to be fair. Like, they seem to show some promise, and really they're now down at 10th on the table, and I don't know, they're certainly not going to add to their game against the Brumbies at home, right, Jip?
Brumbies have hit the form we expected. I think Moana Pacifica probably played the Brumbies back into the form and belief they needed. And they're going to be a tough team to stop now.
Now they're looking pretty good on 22 points, equal with the Blues, five back from the Hurricanes. Brent?
Yeah, I'll be picking the Brumbies.
That leads us to the other game, the Chiefs versus Moana Pacifica. Chiefs at home. Jipper, that seems like a fairly straightforward result.
Yeah, I'd like to see potentially Josh Jacobs give you another crack at 10. Maybe a few other opportunities are in and around that Chiefs squad, just so we know the importance of depth and being able to use it during the season and fresh out other people's bodies. It's proven to be a winning method of this competition for a long time.
And if Damien McKenzie's still got a bit of a knee niggle and their bye is until round 9, this seems like a really good chance to continue to allow him to get that better, Bryn.
Yeah, 100%. If he's no good, don't risk it. I think he'd give another young team the opportunity as well to be able to get that game understanding under his belt. Obviously, Josh Ryan is there, whether they want to start Josh. But yeah, I think it'd be very similar to what I think the Hurricanes did to the Rebels. There will be a lot of changes, and I think we'll see a similar picture in and around a dominant performance for the Chiefs on the week.
Well, they'll probably look to clear out one of the All Black weeks, won't they? One of the All Blacks.
Yes.
They'll get majority of the squad, I'd say, will get their rest week this week.
Well, you don't want to accidentally lose to MP by resting two new people, though, do you? You don't want to make too many changes.
Not necessarily, but you do have to manage those rest weeks pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Well, that is that. That's this weekend of Super Rugby. Thank you very much, James Parsons and Bryn Hall. And looking to enjoy a bye, come out of that, and the Crusaders start making their way up the table.
That's what we're all hoping for.
Righty, guys. Thank you very much, and thank you all for joining us on the Aotearoa Rugby Pod. Remember, you can catch us on YouTube, on all the Sky's platforms, and Rugby Pass TV as well as an audio podcast. Thank you very much for tuning in once again. We'll catch you next week. Mā te wā.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock, because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, parental controls, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.